Welcome to Finding Flow, where your hosts, George Rushen and John Honeycutt, guide you on topics related to finding and achieving the optimal state of human consciousness known as flow state. They will share principles of neuroscience and peak performance, offering practical takeaways and actionable challenges to support you in finding your flow. And now, here are your hosts, George and John.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 17 of Finding Flow. John, I'm here with John. John, how are you today?
Great, George. Good to be with you. It's been a little while since our last recording.
It has been. What have you been up to in the gap between episode 16 and 17?
Yeah, well, before I even answer that, do you know what I love about episode 17?
No, tell me.
It's a prime number. How cool is that?
That might be the coolest part. Might be the coolest part of the whole episode.
Yeah, for all of you guys listening, this might be a good place to just drop off at this point. What I've been up to, I took a week off of coaching at the end of June and went down to New Orleans, my birthplace, and fished. I went out on the Delta and did some fishing with my dad, which was cool. I've gotten back into it, and I've just been coaching about 30 people through flow and peak performance right now. So a lot of my life is still focused on that. The only other real news is that my wife, Bonnie, and I adopted a pet bird. We got a falcon. No, just kidding. We got a cockatiel, much smaller. Her name is Luna. And I'm in love. I'm in bird love.
So it's been a couple weeks now. You had mentioned that there was kind of an acclimation period for the, or maybe that's still going on, where a bird you said it's not like a dog or something like that, where you can be terribly aggressive and kind of not aggressive, but just, yeah, you know, kind of
there's definitely a difference with a bird than that we already have a dog together. Dogs are prey animals. They're predators. Dogs are predators and cats are predators. So there's a different relationship that they have with humans. Birds are prey animals. So they're very skittish. And this Saturday, 2 days from now, will be her 3 week birdiversary with us. So she'll have been with us for 3 weeks. And she was about 8 weeks old when we got her. So she's just a baby. And she is pretty much acclimated to her home and to the habitat that she's in. She's getting more accustomed to me and to Bonnie and to our dog, Charlie, but I wouldn't say that the bonding process is complete by any means. We still have some ways to go.
And I'm going to ask a newbie questions. I have not owned a bird, but do you let the bird just out of the cage and does it kind of fly around the house? How does that work, or does it not get out of the cage at all?
It's a little bit of both. I'd say most of the time it wants to be in its habitat. We call it a habitat, not a cage. You know, just linguistics. And I take her out maybe twice a day, so she'll ride around on my finger or my shoulder, and we've got different little bird jungle gyms and perches in different places in the house. The vision is that as she gets older and more agile with her flying, right now she's still a very clumsy flyer, and so cockatiels have this thing when they're babies of flying right into the wall, and they could concuss themselves, you know, so we're just trying to gradually get her introduced. So she'll have more and more outdoor or outside time, but right now it's probably 90-10 in the habitat and out.
This is all interesting to me. I had assumed the birds were ace flyers right like out of the egg, but apparently there's some time.
It's like a baby foal horse. You know, you see the little foal, yeah, that like can't walk. It's real clumsy and cute. She's the same way. She's figuring things out, but she's getting very agile and athletic in her cage. She uses the combination of her beak and her feet, her claws, to climb up the edge of the cage, and she's getting quite facile with that. So it's a treat. We're obviously we're very in love with Luna.
Excellent. So, big announcement, unrelated to birds, not directly anyway. Big announcement. So this episode is going to be our final episode of Finding Flow. Today we are going to have a discussion around gamification.
Wait, what? This is our last episode?
So last episode, John. Surprise. Yeah. Mm. No. we're going to have an episode around gamification, and then John and I are going to talk about the next chapter in and what we're going to be doing. So we are going to continue podcasting, and we're going to switch gears a little bit, and so we'll get into that.
Let's tell the people why. Like, what's the rationale for this change?
So, we're on episode 17. I think we've pretty successfully run the course of what we wanted to discuss, what we wanted to cover, in Finding Flow. And much like how I'll just go ahead and compare us to Breaking Bad, for example, right? Rather than dragging it out for an extra 5-6 seasons, we decided to end on a high note, which for us is going to be gamification, and then we're going to continue on with actually a podcast around gamification, kind of like Better Call Saul, where we're just going to start something new. It's going to be a new project. It's going to be tangentially related, and I think you guys are going to love it, and we'll get into everything that goes into that.
I so love that you compared us to both Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and I never would have thought Better Call Saul was going to be an even greater show than Breaking Bad, and Bonnie and I just watched it recently, and oh my God, what an amazing show, and I'm committed that our next gamification podcast will be at BCS levels of quality. This follows a trajectory that I'm personally dealing with or professionally dealing with in my coaching, where I originally started coaching from a high performance perspective, peak performance, moved into some of the neuroscience underlying, neuroplasticity and behavioral change and neuronal change and things like that, and how brain science can impact our performance and our behavior. Flow was a natural progression and next step. And as you guys know, we've been coaching a large group of people for the year through all the intricacies and details of how to apply flow state and the conditions and preconditions of getting into flow to your life, positive psychology, all of that. But that's not the end state of the coaching either. My ultimate goal is to be coaching people through gamification and how to apply game principles and game design principles to life, behavior, goal setting, decision making, performance management. I continue to see that as the next step of the evolution, and something that's missing, like relating to life gamefully, is something that's missing even with the group that's going through flow. So in this case, art mirrors life.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So we haven't decided on a first episode release date, but we have a project plan in place, and so we're already rolling on the next podcast, and so we'll keep everyone updated on what that'll look like.
Mm-hmm. Watch this space. yeah, I think one of the things that we've decided is that we'll, rather than just have a general conversation about game principles or gamification frameworks and models and how they apply, we're going to do something a little unique, which is in service of one of the main purposes of this podcast for George and I was to be in community with each other and to be related and to be connected. And so we're going to pick different games. Right now we're looking at different Xbox One video games that are indie, kind of smaller, kind of classic games. And we're going to use the context or the filter of a specific game to discuss gamification principles. So it'll be a little bit of an overview of the game and our experience with it, and then direct applicability to life, behavior, decision-making, goal setting, and achievement, performance, all the rest.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun. But yeah, before we go, I guess, too far down that road, today we're going to talk about gamification. We'll have a more general discussion around gamification. John, anything else you want to say around that, or could we get into, or should we get into kind of defining what gamification even is?
Yeah, let's define it.
So I think we have a lot. There's a, I don't know, a whole bunch of discussions around it. Definitions that you could use around gamification. I like the Gartner one, oddly enough, but that was one that we talked about a little while ago. But the use of gamification for Gartner, like consulting firm Gartner, means the use of game mechanics and experience design to digitally engage and motivate people to achieve their goals. And that's something that they use that, I don't know if we call it a metric, or if they would call it a metric, in the way that they evaluate like different software, for example. Maybe you have a definition you like more, John.
I like it's a good starting point. I'll give you the Merriam-Webster definition. It's a little less techie. The process of adding games or game-like elements to something like a task to encourage participation. And so gamification is simply bringing game elements to a non-game context, generally to increase engagement and performance. And so in both of the Merriam-Webster, the Gartner definition, it's about driving engagement, it's about driving participation, it's about motivation, having people be intrinsically motivated and then set and achieve goals, which, as I've been coaching people through the flow work, that's the same kind of thing. Flow is based on high levels of engagement and participation. So with flow coaching, we're combating the societal trend towards disengagement and distraction. It's all about being intrinsically motivated versus using willpower or being extrinsically motivated. And it's all about setting and achieving goals and doing it from a pretty clean and sober perspective, not a lot of drama or fuss and muss around goals and performance and failure and things like that. So I find it a very natural correlate to talking about flow is talking about game design.
Yeah. I agree. I think, the inquiry into this started to open up for me because I had been operating under an assumption that the only reason anyone would ever play a game is to have fun and for gratification. And it turns out that there's more to it than just that. And we could talk about,
this is for me, it's about turning the, we're in an attention economy where designers are leveraging very clear behavioral and psychological principles to have people engage in things that they want them to engage in, like Facebook. And so it's almost like turning the tools of our of our attention usurpers against them and using them for our own benefit. Can we learn something from designers, specifically game designers, that'll help us to be more engaged in our lives, more motivated, and more successful in our performance against goals? And I think the answer is like a very resounding yes.
Yes, and on the flip side of that, can we recognize maybe where we're getting sucked into some of the pitfalls of game design? You brought up Facebook. I use Strava to record a lot of my workouts. There are things like people like whatever you say. They like your comments. They like your posts on Strava. They give you a kudos if you have a workout, or maybe they don't, John. Maybe they don't give you kudos because your workout wasn't good enough, right? Mm-hmm. So both companies are using that your desire to win or to be acknowledged, to be recognized, to drive you to continue to use the application. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? It wholly depends on what larger game you're playing, but the more aware you could be of what's going on, in examples like that, I think the better off we are.
I think you hit the key word, which is awareness. I really want people to be aware of if your attention is being usurped by an addictive digital designed tool like Facebook or like one of these apps or Farmville back in the day, where people didn't have, we were in the middle of the biggest recession and people were spending money on digital tractors and things. Being aware of the methods and the principles and the tools of design, of game design, and the psychology of the behavior that's behind it, one, can have you be free from addiction if you so choose. And two, you can actually start to design your life more gamefully. You can design the way you're interfacing with things that you want to engage in, be motivated by, or perform against, or set and achieve goals against. So I think a lot of it is unconscious and leads to addiction and disengagement. And I'd like to see people be more aware of it so that they have more choice.
Right.
And I think it's fun.
Right, right, right. Less, more of that, less sitting at a, I don't know, a slot machine for 6 hours. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. There's a guy named Steve Kamm, who is one of the early pioneers of this work and one of the guys who got me into the conversation. He is the founder of a company called Nerd Fitness, and his mission is to help, you know, kind of like, I think his core market is like male overweight video gamers who are winning at their games but losing at their lives, to start to distill some of those principles that has them be successful in a game economy and see if they can make that transition into the quote-unquote real world economy. But he defined gamification by saying that video games have discovered the fundamental principles that can teach us how to live happier, better lives. So again, for both George and I in the podcast and for me in the coaching, this is a second and deeper cut. We can look at positive psychology, we can look at flow and neuroscience and apply what we learn from those disciplines into performance management. Now we can look at video game design and gamification, which, by the way, is a massive industry that you may not be aware of, and then apply that to living happier, better lives. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's great. Can we talk about maybe some common examples that we see in, we already talked about a couple in like in Facebook and Strava, but maybe some other examples that we see that people might identify with?
Yeah, I like that you used like a fitness or well-being app like Strava. My example of that, I think apps are usually designed gamefully. They're designed with these video game principles in mind. But one of the ones I'll use is a meditation app called Insight Timer. A lot of our listeners may use something like that, or Headspace, or Calm, or something. But Insight Timer does something interesting. It gives you, it's called points, badges, and leaderboards. This is one of the principles of game design. If you can get more points for doing something, if they give you a badge, like, oh, this person has meditated a long time, they have a different color badge next to their name, or even having a leaderboard that shows who's got the most meditation time in, Insight Timer uses all of those techniques. They'll give you points for the more consecutive days that you meditate and how long you meditate. So sometimes the motivation for me to go meditate is not because I want the benefit of the meditation or because I'm super disciplined or consistent, but it's because I don't want to have a gap in my perfect record that's being managed for me by Insight Timer. It gets so bad sometimes that I will not just want to sit and meditate by myself. I want to make sure I've got the app there so that I'm getting credit for my good deed. But that would be one of my favorite examples, is Insight Timer.
I think that's a good one. I use Strava the most. The one that's coming to mind is Krispy Kreme donuts. I don't know if they're still doing this, but when the COVID vaccine came out, they were giving, if you could show proof of your vaccination, they would give you a free donut every day, which blew my mind because, yeah, I guess on top of not getting COVID, having donuts every day, very good for your health. I just cracked me up. But anyway, there's a game you could play if you're in the Seattle area.
Well, those loyalty programs like that are another example of gamification. Like punch cards is a very low tech, low fidelity example. Mm-hmm. Starbucks did a really interesting one with their rewards app where you could get it on your phone. And then you can order ahead. You get points that you can use. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, how can I perform better as a Starbucks customer so that I'll get some free swag or get some benefit? They give you different bronze and silver and gold, and people take that seriously. And then it adds a whole nother layer. It's not just about going and getting a coffee. Now there's a game that I'm playing that I'm invested in winning. And the real winner is, is Starbucks, because you keep coming back to their to get their burnt coffee.
Do you remember Marlboro Miles back in the day?
Marlboro cigarettes?
So Marlboro Miles, I mean, you weren't as cool as I was in high school. So I used to smoke. Marlboro Miles is, you could rip the side of the cigarette package off, and you would collect, I don't know how many, it was like 5 miles or something like that. And you could send enough of them in to Marlboro, and they would give you a cool leather jacket or a boom box or whatever. There was all sorts of Marlboro swag that you could win. So they were on it. They were on it early, John, Marlboro.
It's interesting. Just like flow state, gamification can be used for a good or ill purposes. So just like flow state, it's good to get an understanding of the models, principles, and behavioral ideals behind it, so that you can make sure that you're not falling for the Marlboro Miles. One of the examples that I like about gamification is there's a behavioral psychologist named Natasha Dalshoul who coined a term called the ludic loop. Ludic loop. And she did this after watching people playing slot machines. And she actually did her graduate thesis on this. And she spent almost a decade watching dedicated hardcore casino gamers, game of chance gamers. And what she found was interesting is that people who play slot machines, initially, when you're a newbie at slot machines, you're playing to win. By the time you get a little jaded in your sophomore kind of effort with your slot machine career, you recognize that you're never going to win. And so you give up on the idea of striking it rich on the slot machine. And instead, it's the loop that you get involved in of just putting in money, playing the game, not winning, putting in money, playing the game, that the act itself is the reward. Like the cost that you pay to participate, both in your time and in the quarters or whatever you're putting in, that actually is the reward. And once she defined that ludic loop, people started drawing connections to all kinds of interesting things. The most obvious one, I think, is Netflix. So Netflix, the master of binge watching, will do that thing where you finish one episode of Better Call Saul, and then before you know it, before the credits even run, you're on a countdown to the next episode. You don't even have to press a button. So now that's a ludic loop. To spend the time and energy and stress to watch the next episode, that cost is the reward. And that's what drives the kind of just one more, whether it's just clicking on Facebook or one more news story or one more chapter in this book. So that ludic loop is one of the core drivers that a lot of these attention economists are using to steal your attention.
Sounds like marriage too, John. You know, you give up that idea of striking it rich early, and then you're in the ludic loop for years and years.
Even though my wife is one of the listeners of the podcast, I just really have to say I have no idea what you're talking about there. This, dear listeners, this is one of the rare times that George and I are on the opposite sides of something. For me, marriage is evergreen and rich, and every day it's a new adventure. It does have a loopy. A loopy kind of quality.
Yes. Yes.
This is the Uber thing. I didn't know about this, but as I was researching for this particular episode, I found a very interesting story I wanted to share with you guys, which is I'm only familiar with Uber app as a consumer. And I think they've done a really great job of hooking riders with drivers through the app. But apparently what they're doing to the driver is they're engaging a ludic loop that they actually had to kind of pull back a little bit for safety reasons. They would have the driver presented with their next rides, 10 minutes before their current ride was over, so that there was no friction, no downtime, and they could just seamlessly move to the next ride. And what was happening is people who no longer wanted to drive, who no longer felt safe to drive, who didn't need the money, they had done what they said they were going to do, succumbed to like the Uber equivalent of binge watching, and they started binge driving, and then there was a concomitant increase in accidents and safety issues. So Netflix had to kind of, or sorry, Uber had to kind of pull some of that back. But I thought that was a super interesting example of the ludic loop.
I could see how that would, you would maybe, yeah, want to keep driving. It makes sense. And yeah, the mechanism, like you said, sounds exactly like Netflix, or I think all of the streaming services do something like that now. You know, Hulu and Amazon, they'll just play the next. YouTube does that, right? You could just play YouTube videos forever. Yeah. You know, unless you hit stop. So
I think it's good to be aware that these big companies are, they're highly capitalized. They've got massive programming workforces, and they're, I'm not saying that they're evil or bad. I enjoy their services and products. But Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, said in an investor call recently that the biggest competitor that Netflix has is not like Amazon Prime or Hulu or Disney Plus. It's sleep. And they're actively working on it. They've got researchers and behavioralists and programmers who are actively working to take more mind share, not from the other streamers, but from your sleep. So gamification is real, and it's out there, and it's being used by very, very large corporations to get your eyeballs.
Should we talk about some common gamification models that we see, since we talked about some examples?
Yeah, I mean, the most basic, I think, level of gamification that we see is points, badges, and leaderboards. So common, it's got an acronym. People call it PBL, not to be confused with what you were into back in your Marlboro Miles days of PBR, right? A Marlboro and a PBR, was that like a good Saturday night?
No. Grew up in Pennsylvania. It was Yingling.
Oh,
yeah.
American lager. Yeah, so points, badges, and leaderboards are anything that's going to give you a gold star for your participation and your engagement. And then you're now driven to do more, to behave better, to participate deeper, to engage more deeply, to set and achieve goals better, because you're either going to get an award, you're going to get an achievement, you're going to get a point. And then the best is when they put it on a leaderboard so they can show you, these are like, some businesses do this, like these are our best customers. They've bought the most from us. We want to honor them. And so now people want to get their name up on the board. I remember back in my Marlboro Miles days, I would go to the bar and play the trivia machine. And the trivia games were cool because they not only connected you with the people in that bar, but like you were connected to, if I remember it correctly, it's been a while, but you're connected to people all over the country. And then if you won, if you did well, your name was listed and the bar that you were in. So that was an incentive to keep paying money and keep drinking beer to get higher up. Turns out performance was inversely correlated to how long you stayed and how much you drank, but
yeah.
Nevertheless.
Yeah, there was a bar that I used to go to when I first moved out here that would, you would be rewarded depending on how much money you spent at the bar. And so you would get your name on a plaque or something like that. And then you would get your own like mug that they would keep behind the counter. And if you drank enough, or spent enough money there, you would eventually get your own stool at the bar with your name on it. And I can't remember
how cool is that.
And so there's an old comedian who made a joke about like how can you be both a winner and a loser at the same time? And it was their punchline was like being an employee of the month at Wendy's or something like that. I think having your own stool at the bar might actually take the cake. But anyway. I digress.
It's like going to the prime rib restaurant where you get a free meal or get your t-shirt and get your picture on the wall. If you're the one who could eat like the 64 ounce steak or something. Yeah. Dubious rewards and distinctions.
Yeah.
There's a researcher named Jane McGonigal who was, I believe, the world's first doctorate or PhD in video game design or gamification. And she was a PTSD survivor and came at game design from the perspective of working with soldiers returning from the Middle East and how to use game technologies to help them deal with PTSD and move from post-traumatic stress disorder into what was called post-traumatic stress growth. There's a phase after disorder where you can start to reintegrate, you can start to grow again and let go of some of the embodied stress and wounding. And they used gamification models to do that. And it was to really, really great effect. They even created a game called Cold World, where people who had been burned in battle and had like painful burns could engage in this video game, this simulation of being in these sort of icy, snowy areas. And it would literally provide pain relief. And that was on par with or better than pharmaceutical intervention, and provided a greater degree, a quicker degree of recovery from injury. This is very interesting work. Jane has written a book called Super Better and developed a whole methodology called Super Better that I think is an interesting one to discuss.
Yeah, and I think since I think we're trying to stay at, I don't know, maybe not 30,000 feet, but 20,000 feet today, in the gamification podcast that we're developing, we'll get into these models, I think, in some real detail. And Super Better is a good one.
I agree. We shouldn't jump into all of them. I do, like, just one at random that I'll highlight is they talk about challenging yourself. And that's one of the principles of game design. Is game design is all of game playing is all about challenge. You don't want to do the same easy task over and over. Typically with a new game, you do one task, it's a new game, it's a new task, you figure that out, you master it, and then they give you a second task, and then you learn how to do that one. And then maybe they'll combine the two tasks together in a novel way. The challenge itself is what keeps you engaged. If the game was just stupid easy, you would get bored with it very quickly and you would stop playing. What keeps you coming back, even to the point where engagement goes into addiction, is because of the carefully metered progression of challenge. And so one of the Super Better principles is to challenge yourself or to adopt a challenge mindset. Given the coaching and the cohort that I work with and the clients that I work with, I would say that right there would be a game changer for most of the people that I coach. If they could stop looking at their games as something where they want to be challenged and their lives as something where they don't want to be challenged, that would be a paradigm shift.
Yeah. Yes, it would. It would. And you see that mechanism certainly in all sorts of games. And for some reason, right, we're happy to as the video game levels get harder and the bad guys get harder to beat, or the whatever it is, you know, the Candy Crush or something gets harder to crush. You right? We have no problem spending more time and effort and even money to get better at that at those things. But sometimes
we embrace the challenge.
We embrace the challenge.
We want to work harder.
Right. But
there's a big trend in video game design. A while ago, 20 years ago, back in the days of The Sims and SimCity and things like that, the trend was to make games easier so that it would appeal to more of a mainstream audience. But that backfired and people weren't buying those games as much or weren't engaging long with those games. The games that are coming out now are actually designed to be almost impossibly hard. It's a very interesting trend in video game design. It started with a game called Dark Souls or Demon Souls back in the day, where the whole tagline is that you're just going to die. You're going to go up against a challenge that's almost insurmountable. And a lot of people engage with a game like that and get frustrated and leave. But there's something around mastering something that's inherently extremely difficult and also kind of meaningless, because whether you're failing or succeeding in a game doesn't really matter. But that's an interesting trend, is that the challenge level has to be high. And I see that the clients that I coach who have the greatest results to show, whether it's athletically, entrepreneurially, relationally, at work, whatever, creatively, are the ones who've leaned into and developed that challenge mindset. And they play it like it's a game. They don't take it so seriously, the whole idea of performance and failure becomes more of a creative expression rather than life or death.
Yeah. 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 And if the, I think, but what I was pointing to earlier, I think, you know, in the same way, I think we could, sometimes we're hesitant in real life to, put time and effort into either into the resources directly or into the training or whatever it is that we need to get better at work, to get better at having relationships with people, to get better at whatever it is, your diet, your exercise, your sleep. Whereas if I was creating a little video game character and I could put a couple, you know, a couple points into my sleep metric, of course I would do that. So yes, to your point, changing the way that we kind of look at life as a whole, and how we maybe we categorize things and how we want to allocate resources to those things is a huge game changer.
I think that's the core of this episode and the whole podcast that we're creating. The whole coaching focus for my next year with gamification is that it's all inside of that. Moving from this is a battle, or life is life and death, or this is so heavy and serious and dramatic, and you don't understand, I mean, in my life, it's so important. Moving it into a game context where challenge is part of the fun, where risk-taking is part of the equation, where failing is baked into the experience, can transform people's experience of being and performing in the world. One, just living gamefully will have you be more alive, passionate, and engaged. And then two, I think you make more straightforward decisions. I think decision-making in games is devoid of any of the psychological garbage that we bring with our own decisions. George, you and I were talking about this before the episode started rolling, that if you were in a video game and your boss invited you out for dinner and you didn't want to go, you would say no. But in life, sometimes we make investments of our time and our energy and our whatever we're going to do that are not based on game style decisions. They're not based on this is going to be the best for what I'm trying to create. There's other kind of considerations, like what will people think? You're free from that in video games. And I think if people could adopt more of that mindset, their decisions would just get more crisp. There'd just be a lot less of that. Ooh, what should I do? There's so many different options.
Yeah, just go on side quests for the rest of your life. Don't worry about it. It's all the same. I think, John, rather than maybe getting into going too deep around gamification, because we will do that. Maybe could we talk a little bit about the model for the gamification podcast and kind of what we plan on doing, and maybe we could talk about the first game we're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
What we're really interested in now in is, as John mentioned, taking a look at video games, some of our favorite video games, and how they work from a gamification standpoint, as we talked about. So talking about the modeling, how they actually get us to play, how they reward us, how they kind of get us coming back, and I think importantly for anyone listening, even if you are a non-gamer, how those mechanisms, how those strategies, how that aligns and shows up in your life, because it does, as we talked about with some of the apps and other reward systems that we see in real life, they're there whether we kind of realize them or not. And so I think the more that we can kind of increase the awareness around that, you can kind of understand what's happening. It puts you in control to better allocate your time and resources in life.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a critical point to make, is that the audience that we're looking for in the new podcast is not necessarily people who are already video game players or people who want to be video game players, but rather taking an interesting cut at something that's omnipresent and ubiquitous in our life, and then seeing how it applies to life design, behavior management, decision-making, goal setting, engagement, the rest, given that it's so potent and effective in the digital kind of experiences that it's used in. And by the way, it is ubiquitous. Any website that you go to, any streaming service that you engage with on a telephone, any app that you use on a phone or a tablet, all of it literally has been, every single bit of it has been designed with engagement, participation, rewards, loyalty, all of the gamification principles are there. Because there's so much capital and money that's at stake, they've gotten very crisp at understanding the psychology and the behavioral nature of it. So again, this isn't to convert you into gaming if you're not a gamer. It's to really be informed by and inspired by these principles. And ultimately, I think the goal that I would have for listeners of that podcast would be that you would learn to live life more gamefully, that you would be able to relate to your life more as a game and take it. What I'm about to say is kind of, you got to take it a little bit two different ways, but take your life less seriously. Because when you're playing a game, hear this, you passionately care about the outcome, but you don't hold it so seriously. You gaming pulls out the best in people. You want to actually perform at your highest level, but then when you fail, it's not a big deal. There's a really great balance point that gaming provides as a perspective that if we could lift that out of the digital experience and put that into our behavioral existential world, would make a massive difference for people in terms of both their quality of life and their performance.
And the first game we're going to get into is a game called Stardew Valley. I've not gotten into it very deeply at all yet. John, you have played it. Can we talk a little bit about Stardew Valley and what it is?
I'm really pleased that we're kicking off with Stardew Valley because I first heard about this game in reading Steve Young's book called Ultra Learning. I became very intrigued with these idea of meta learning and ultra learning technologies so that I could shortcut or reduce the time it takes to onboard and acquire new information and new skills. And one of the case studies that Steve Young uses is of this gentleman named Eric Bardone from Tacoma, Washington, who had just graduated from some video game design program, got his degree, and was ready to join the ranks of one of the big AAA publishers, and then got a wild hair and decided to build his own. And Eric was apparently very loved these games, these Japanese-style retro games back from the 80s. They weren't retro when he was playing them, of course. They're retro now. And there was one called Maple Valley or Maple Story or something like that that he was really charmed by. And he wanted to create a modern incarnation of it. And he was surprised to learn that you have to, game design is not just about designing the game, but there's the graphics, there's the music, there's the animation, there's the mechanics. There's like 30 or 40 different elements that went into this. And over the course of about a year, he mastered all of that, just put his whole attention on it. And he created a game, we'll talk more about this in the first episode, but he created a game that was as an indie game developed by a single developer, outperformed many of the AAA Platinum publishers, and went on to be a multi-million dollar product. I think he succeeded at creating that charming, engaging, almost zen-like experience that his games from his childhood had created for him. And so I'm really pleased that that's going to be the game that we lead off with.
I am too. I'm interested in those types of games, and I've seen enough Stardew Valley to know it'll be fun to discuss, especially in this context. I don't really have anything else, John. If you don't have any other points, I think we ought to leave. Maybe we could leave it here.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge our listeners and those of you who've been on this journey with us from the beginning. I feel like George and I are really still very committed to the ideas of personal development and transformation. And that commitment is what takes us into this kind of next foray. We want to continue to keep things fresh. We want to continue to iterate. And I just really appreciate the amount of listenership that we've developed. We haven't promoted this podcast really in any way. And We've hit some of the, you know, hit and exceeded a number of the milestones that George and I had set for ourselves. And thank you. Thanks for being a part of this. I hope that it's been meaningful for you. And I hope that you'll make the transition with us. And gamer or non-gamer, I hope that you will start to develop the ability to start living your life more gamefully, and that that makes a difference for you.
Yes, I'll second that. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will and at the same time we'll talk to you soon, and you can keep listening to us.
George, great conversation. Love you, brother. It's good to be with you. I'm looking forward to what comes next, and see everyone soon.